Accession number 27460, Reel 3.
Join the Royal Artillery, both you and...
Mr. Wilkes, Reel 3.
To join the Royal Artillery, both you and your brother?
Yes.
And where was this? What was the name of this unit?
It was the 70th West Riding Field Regiment, based in Valley Parade in Bradford. I believe its early origins had been the Bradford Pals, but I'm not quite sure. Anyway, regimental headquarters and one battery was based in Bradford, and that was the 277th Field Battery. The 279 Battery was based at Otley with one troop at Ilkley. So the regiment was spread about it. Now, I understand that at some time there had been a battery at Halifax, the 278 battery, and I think this is probably true. But when we joined the regiment, they'd just disposed of their horses and they were going mechanised. And anyone that could drive or ride would be appreciated. Well, I had my licence, so had my brother actually. We both joined as dispatch riders, and so that was an insight.
What was the process, the actual process of joining?
Well, from what I can remember, we went and filled forms in, and then we were issued, they didn't have uniforms for us. We had a brown boiler suit each, a forage cap with a grenade badge to put in it, and that was all we were issued with. We would go down, if my memory serves me right, the battery met on a Tuesday evening, and we met up with a regimental headquarters on the Thursday evening at the same place. Now, regimental headquarters had two nights, just like we had, so that was that. So the early stages, we were getting tuition on, well, they taught us to march and parade ground drill and that sort of thing. But we were also given instruction on manoeuvres, really, of how you manoeuvred the regiment about, whether you're driving in column of route, which was all spread out along the line, or side by side, or whatever, I can't remember all the names now, and the different signals. But these were all horse-drawn signals. Man would be raising his cap and you'd follow that, or bounce his hand up and down, you had to make the horses gallop, well, you had to put your foot further down on the throttle. All this. We got all this sort of tuition. And, of course, bear in mind, from March to September wasn't a long time. When the light nights came, they would take... We were very short of transport, we were short of everything. The regiment, the battery just had six guns at Bradford. They had four guns at Otley and two at Ilkley. The guns at Bradford were 18-pounders, and the others were 4.5 howitzers. And so they would take us out onto Baildon Moors to put us through our paces. Well, I could ride the motorcycle all right, and no problem there. So, and I'd said I wanted to learn to drive. I knew the army would put us, train us and put us through our tests, and I knew it would be good. And I'd already read lots of books, which you could get at those in those days, on how to drive, how to double the clutch, how to do everything. And having a good mechanical knowledge on the motorbikes, I knew exactly what I should be doing. So when they plunked me into this Guy Ant 1500 weight truck, the sergeant instructor, he got in beside me and gave me some instructions, and I set off to drive across the heather on the moor there. And he says, get out, he says, you can drive, you're just wasting my time. That was Sergeant Sharman. I said, I cannot say this is the first time I've ever driven. So I got about another 5 minutes at the wheel. No, he says, you can manage all right. And so I'm not going to say I did, but it satisfied him. There were people in more need of tuition than I was. Now, at the same time, there were quite a number of well-heeled people that had their own private motor cars. Synchromesh gearboxes hadn't been in very long then, but these people had got cars with synchromesh gearboxes, and they could not double the clutch. They didn't know how to, and they didn't know why. So that was left for another day. I did drive another truck, a gun tractor, right through Bradford City one day, and that was a six-wheeled gun tractor. And then it was time to go to the annual practice camp, which was up at Reedsdale.
Before we go to that, can we look at the unit as a whole and its organisation? You have in the headquarters. Do you recall who was commanding?
Oh, yes. Just give me a moment and I'll... Colonel... It's just escaped me for the moment. I'll try and come back to that one.
So you have a colonel commanding?
Yes. The unit. And I remember the second in command was a Major Pepper, who was also a mill owner in Bradford.
I was just going to ask you what their background was.
Yes. Suddus was the name of the colonel. Colonel Suddus.
And he had a second in command who you named. How was the unit constituted coming down the hierarchy, in effect?
Well, those were regimental headquarters senior officers. Then there was a major commanding the battery with... I can't remember just exactly now.
But the battery had six guns, you were saying?
Six guns, yes.
18-pounder, which was First World War.
Oh, they were, yes. Vintage. In fact... some of the men in the regiment had actually served on those guns in the First World War. They were still in the regiment.
That's a battery. Is a battery split up in any way?
The battery was made of troops. Now, I think at that time there were two guns to a troop. But that altered. Things did alter as time went on.
We're looking at that
at that specific time,
moment.
Yes.
And who commanded a troop, or what rank would he hold?
A captain, yes.
And then we're coming down through two guns in the troop to the single gun. How many would be on a crew of an 18-pounder?
Six men on a gun crew.
And was there a senior man there as well?
The sergeant, yes. There was a sergeant and a bombardier, and invariably a lance bombardier, and then the other three were just crew members.
Now, you were on the... It seems to be on the transport side, were you?
Yes, I was never on
the
guns.
You never got on the guns?
No.
But that's the split down. Now, the transport side itself, can you go through the vehicles, the types of vehicles that you have?
Yes, the gun tractors we had, the few that we did have, they were of about 1933 vintage. They were six-wheelers, and they had tracks that could be put round the four back wheels to give them traction. But they weren't six-wheel drive, they were just four-wheel drive. They were equipped with a winch, and they were a five-speed gearbox. The first gear was an ultra-low gear for crawling up hillsides, etc. We were told at that time that the regiment was going to be re-equipped with quads. These were permanent four-wheel drive vehicles of about 24, 25 horsepower. And we did eventually get those.
These tractors, were they efficient vehicles? Reliable?
Well, they were okay for when we went up to Reedsdale. I didn't see any getting stuck, but... I think they probably would. But one of the problems I would think would be that they weren't all-wheel drive.
And they pulled the gun, did they?
They pulled the gun, yes. There was a gun and what was originally the limber that carried the ammunition, but they were eventually replaced with ammunition trailers.
And you got no insight into how to work the guns, anything like that, at this stage?
No. I just knew that the difference, an 18-pounder had a fixed charge. The 4.5 howitzer had a separate cartridge in which you could put different charges to suit the range and the elevation.
So you've had these tractors. What were the... How many of what tractors did you have, do you recall?
I think we just had four, but we should have had six.
You're too short, in effect.
Yes, we were.
So you pulled four guns into a position, then you'd have to go back for two, presumably.
Well, we never got to that stage, because what happened, when we went onto the practice camp at Reedsdale, we took what transport we had, and it was augmented with transport up there so that we were efficient.
So, other than the tractors, what other kind of vehicles did the unit have?
Well, we had Morris commercial wireless trucks, and we had... they were rated as 500 weight. They had the same engine as the gun tractor, six-cylinder. Then we had the Guy Ants, which were 1,500 weight, and Morris 1,500 weight, which once again had the same engine as the gun tractor. And then I think our officers, our senior officers, used their own private cars. I think. I can't be sure.
And what was the role of the other transport, the ones you just mentioned, the Morrison and the Guy?
Well, the 500 weights, they were wireless cars. The 1,500 weights, they were line-laying vehicles. They used to lay the lines for the telephones, lines up to the guns, etc., etc.
And other than that transport, you've mentioned the fact that the officers probably used their own cars. Were you then down to motorbikes?
We were, yes. And sergeant majors all had to be able to ride motorbikes, and this didn't suit them at all. They didn't like it. They'd rather ride a horse.
Yes, there must have been that bit of difficulty between the traditionalists and the...
Oh, yes.
...coming in.
Everything. You see, a gun would be led into its position by a man on a horse, whereas now it was all entirely different.
And the men got used to, you know, love their horses, didn't they?
They did, yeah. Yes.
The role of the motorbike, the dispatch riders.
Yes.
What was that?
Well, it was to maintain contact between. Wherever, regimental headquarters, battery headquarters, troop headquarters, gun positions. I've done a little bit of everything on those lines.
That's carrying messages, presumably,
yes.
and orders.
That's right.
Around the so you were, in effect, covering the whole of the unit. You weren't just tied down to Bradford.
At times, yes. After we'd been to the practice camp, we were only back a few days before war was declared. So
can I ask you about what was the public view towards the territorial soldier at that, you know, in peacetime?
Saturday Night Soldiers was the name they used to go by. People used to think they were going out and getting drunk and this and that and the other, but I don't think that particular regiment lived up to that title at all. In my opinion, apart from the oddbods, they were a decent set of fellows. A lot of them were employed by the officers that commanded them. And there was a really friendly sort of atmosphere between the two. Looking back, it worked all right, but I would have thought that it would have been better if they hadn't been commanded by officers for whom they worked.
It's too familiar.
I would think so. Not that they did. That was the thing I admired about them. They never seemed to take advantage.
Discipline would be of a different type to what it would be in the regular army, and a different emphasis.
Well, possibly, because I've experienced both. With the TA there, people knew their officers and they would go up and talk to them, whereas I think in the regular army you went through the channels before you approached them.
Were you able to retain the men? Was there a turnover, a regular turnover of people coming in and going out? Peacetime, I'm still talking about.
Well, I wasn't in long enough for that. What happened, they got oversubscribed to the 70th Field Regiment, and then they started to form what they called a second line regiment, which was the 121. So I could mention that later.
So when the regiment was moving, it would take up quite a bit of road space, no doubt.
If you had your full complement of vehicles, they said it would stretch 10 miles. And you had to keep 100 yards interval between vehicles. And then the motorcycles would police the area, and that was a bit of the work of the dispatch riders, controlling traffic at road junctions and things like that.
Did it annoy civilians when you're on the move in that way? Did you have problems with civilian traffic?
Well, by I got involved in that, the war had already started and it didn't, you know, people gave way willingly. I think they felt that we were doing a good job.
You have this 100 yards between your vehicles. What about speed on the road?
If I remember correctly, I think we had to do 20 miles in the hour. That was our speed, which meant you could do 25, but with all your stops it brought you back to your 20 miles average.
Did it involve moving at night in the dark in your early training?
No. The only bit of night moving was up at Reedsdale, and that was negligible.
Were they petrol-driven vehicles?
Oh, yes. All the field artillery units were petrol-driven.
And did you have your own petrol supplies on the camp? So
no.
Or your drill halls or wherever you were?
When we were in Bradford, they used to go to a particular petrol station to fill the vehicles. The day before the outbreak of war, we dug a petrol pit and we were supplied with 2 gallon tins of petrol, which we put in the pit and kept there.
What about money that the territorials had? Did you have any form of pay for drills or?
You got £5 a year.
That would be a bounty, wasn't it?
That's right. And that was all you would get. Whilst you were upon practice camp, you got the same as if you were in the regular army, which was 14 shillings a week, 2 shillings a day.
And the fact, of course, that you also got this travelling around, which you wouldn't have got in the civilian situation.
That's
where
right.
You were tied in at work.
Mm-hmm.
Did that attract a number of people, or was it all... you have mentioned the fact that most people were attached to a workforce. So, but were there people who were attracted to the fact that this was one way of getting a holiday, a break from routine?
I think it was. Because, bearing in mind, everyone normally just got a week's holiday with pay from their works. They would get a fortnight away from the work to do their training, but it wasn't every firm like ours that gave us our week as well.
You mentioned the fact that you all you got was an overall in the beginning. When did they issue you with uniform? Was this before the war started?
No.
So you were with overalls all the way?
Overalls until the 4th of September.
Do you recall where you were and what you were doing on the morning that Chamberlain made the announcement?
I do, yes. I remember very well, because on the day before, I, along with a few others, had been told we had to go to York to collect some vehicles. And we had to set off after dark, which we did, and we waited till dawn, and we never got any vehicles, and all came back. And then we'd just had some breakfast, late breakfast, and we were waiting as this announcement was going to be made, And the only radio was in the sergeant's mess upstairs in the drill hall. And we were all clamouring round the stairs to hear, and we heard it. 10 minutes later, my name was shouted, and I was given some dispatches, and I had to go straight to the barracks at Otley and to Ilkley with messages to the outlying bits of the regiment. I took the first messages.
Mobilisation, in effect, was it?
No, we'd been mobilised on the Friday beforehand. We were all mobilised. So it was, I think, to give them final orders, what role they had to play from now on, sort of thing.
What were your feelings about war and what might happen to you and the dangers? I mean, those must have come into your mind.
Yes, to a point. Just wanting to get there and get stuck in.
Was it a sense of adventure, do you think?
Yes. Stupid, but though it might sound, but yes. I was all for it. I wanted to go and...
Were there thoughts that it might be very similar to the First World War at this point?
Yes, it was. And I'll tell you something. I was invited to apply for a commission. But it would be with an infantry regiment, the Duke of Wellington's Light Infantry. And thinking of the life of an officer, a junior officer, in an infantry unit, didn't appeal to me. I thought a dispatch rider sounds a bit longer.
Before we go into the war, and I should have asked this, of course, was to talk about your one and only camp that you went to.
Yes.
What are your memories of being at that camp? Where was it again?
Reedsdale.
And what are your memories of it?
Well, it was hard, it was cold. It was August. I passed my driving test up there. And that was a good thing. I remember travelling overnight from Bradford. We had to go up on the train. The road party had gone on the previous day. And we went up on the train. We arrived at Nosegate Station in the early hours. Dawn had broken, and there'd been a lot of drunks on the train. That was one letdown. And we were glad to get out of the stinking carriages, and we were conveyed by buses and lorries up to Reedsdale. And then we had to wait. The regiment that was supposed to have vacated weren't being vacated until after breakfast that day. So we had to wait out there till they'd been fed, and then the huts were cleared, and then we were taken in, and after the men had cleared away from the camp, we were allocated tents. That was a bit, you know, but we adjusted. We had to learn. We had to learn something. And I think both my brother and I, but we were separated by then. We went in with the attitude that we were going to try and make the best of it. We weren't going to let army life destroy us. And it could be crude.
Yes, you're moving into a world of language, bad language, and screaming and shouting and going, oh, how did you adjust to it?
It was never as bad as that programme, Bad Lads Army. Never. They were civilised in every respect. I thought... Looking back over the years, I've thought, what an excellent regiment to have joined. And again, when I got transferred, the regular regiment was the same.
So you're in tents on Reedsdale?
Yes, in tents.
What size tent?
There were bell tents. I think we're sleeping 8 to the tent. But... I know you could, with a squeeze, you could get more in.
And what were you lying on?
Palliasses. We had bed boards, floorboards in the tent, and we had palliasses on those. And, of course, everything had to be cleaned up and the boards had to be lifted because the smokers would drop their cigarettes, wouldn't they? And I didn't smoke. But all these had to be picked up and found before inspection. Discipline was rigid, but it was fair.
What time was Ravalli?
6.
And your first task, as you say, would obviously clean the tent, presumably.
No, first task was roll call 6:15. Then you came back in. Some mornings we had physical training straight after.
Did you have physical training shorts and so forth?
No.
That was still in your bodysuits, in effect, your overalls.
That's right.
And what kind of physical training was it? Swedish drill, the arms and leg bends?
That's right, yes. And then you came back and you tidied your tent up and set your kit out for inspection. And this all had to be supplied by you personally. And I remember going and buying these housewives at Woolworths for my brother and me. But they saw us to the end of the war.
So what equipment did you have? I mean, you've got your overall. What were you laying out for kit inspection?
You had to lay out your boot brushes, your polish and everything, your knife, fork and spoon. Goodness me, I can't remember everything now.
Your billy can.
We didn't have billy cans at that stage, but we got a mug, an enamel mug each, whilst we were at camp, which we kept for ourselves. But plates, which were enamel, were kept at the cookhouse.
And who did the inspection?
An officer, orderly officer and sergeant.
And was this a morning thing at the camp, every morning? Or?
Yes, while you went on parade, they went and had a look at your tents. And that was that.
At what point did you have breakfast?
7:30.
What kind of food were they giving you?
Well, the first meal we got at Reedsdale Camp was most disgusting. The tables weren't all that clean. We didn't have plates or anything. And I remember them coming round with these loaves of bread. Now, none of us had a proper bread knife to cut them with. And the bread was virtually hacked and torn to pieces amongst the six men at the table. There was a piece of margarine put down on the table in its wrapper. There was a sergeant came round with a 7-pound tin of jam with a great big spoon, and he put a couple of dollops down like that on the table. And then, when we'd sort of tried to make the best of that, we were then suddenly issued with, told to come and get plates, and we were given bacon and tinned tomato. So that made up for it. And then after breakfast, of course, we saw what was left on the table scrubbed off. It was you could virtually pare it off with a putty knife or something like that, the grease and the fat. I don't know how people live. But that was it.
And was it essentially the same food at breakfast time for the time?
Oh, after our officers had insisted on a standard for us, and we got that standard. We had our meals served in plates, or on plates, should I say. We had our own mugs, as I say. And we had to make sure our knife, fork and spoon were always kept clean. There was a bucket of hot water outside the cookhouse, and you could go and wash it in there. And mind you, everyone's was washed in there, but it was the only hot water you ever saw, because you had to wash and save with cold.